Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
As we all know, the news this summer has been driven and dominated by stories of airstrikes and rocket launches as the conflict between Palestine and Israel and events in Ukraine have dominated headlines. In the midst of all this, Charlie Flanagan became Minister for Foreign Affairs and he's with me now in studio. Minister, thank you very much indeed for coming into the studio. But before we talk about your present portfolio and the responsibilities therein, you served briefly, very briefly, as Minister for Children before the reshuffle. Now, what are your views on this case of the young woman who is at the centre of this latest case and controversy over abortion?
Well, I have to say, Sean, that it's deeply disturbing. Not only is there a tragedy perpetrated on an innocent young woman in very difficult circumstances, but there's also a baby involved here. I do believe it's important, and I agree with Leo Varadkar, Minister for Health, when he directed the HSE yesterday to seek a full report to assemble all of the facts. There seems to be a conflict as to the engagement with members of the medical profession, with the level of treatment, with the timelines. And I believe before we do anything, it's important that the facts be assembled and the facts be disclosed. I understand that the HSE have said that they will report sometime in September. I believe time to be of the essence here. It's absolutely essential that we have this report on the facts as quickly as possible. I see no reason why we can't have this in a couple of weeks. And I do believe it's essential that the Cabinet is fully briefed by Minister Varadkar in mid-September.
What about the possibility that what emerges from the report may suggest to you and colleagues that the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act be revisited in some way?
Well, there is a suggestion that the Act isn't working. However, I think before we can be conclusive on that or before we can form an opinion on that, we need to be appraised fully of the facts and the circumstances. There is built into the legislation and you know, we're not going to revisit the lengthy hearings, the submissions, the engagement that ultimately formed the Act about this time last year. I think it's important that the review mechanism under the Act be allowed to take place. If the current case means bringing that forward a few months, well then so be it. There doesn't appear to be an appetite for a further referendum. However, it's important that government does address the issue in the context of the facts of this particularly harrowing case so early into the operation of the legislation.
What would you say to the suggestion, and it's put forward increasingly by your partners in government in the Labour Party, that 31 years on from the original amendment, the Article 43.3 that was inserted into the Constitution, that should now, in the round, be examined with the view perhaps to putting the issue before the people again?
Yeah, well, I think it's important that we look at, I would say, the Fine Gael position, my party position. And before the last election, we made three essential and important points. Firstly, we said that we wouldn't legislate for abortion in Ireland, and we didn't. Secondly, we said that we had to address, that it was incumbent upon us to address the issue of the European Court of Human Rights judgment in the ABC case. And that was addressed in the form of legislation. And thirdly, we promised that women in pregnancy would receive an appropriate level of medical treatment that was necessary. That is inbuilt into the legislation. And it's important in the context of this case that you've now mentioned that there is adequate follow through on that, and that we satisfy ourselves that there was an appropriate level of medical treatment and attention available to that person. There's quite an interesting piece by David Farrell this morning in one of the morning newspapers.
He's a UCD academic, yeah, and he was involved in the research side to the Constitutional Convention.
He was, and I was leader of the Fine Gael group in the Constitutional Convention, and I believe it was a fine engagement. And David has says that maybe there could well be a possibility that a citizens' assembly might address the issues at stake here. I'm not saying it's the avenue down which we should go, but I do believe it's an important a contribution. But I believe more than anything else, we need to address the facts by assembling the detail of what has taken place in this particularly harrowing case of the last few months, that report is laid before Cabinet by Leo Varadkar at the very earliest opportunity, and then government will have a look at the best way forward.
Do you personally favour the idea of reconvening the Constitutional Convention that we refer to, or a variation of it as put forward by David Farrell?
Yeah, it's an option. I'm not going to make proposals here this morning in the absence of the facts, but we've had three referendums. We've had over 30 years of intense and heated and impassioned debate on this issue. And it might be just an angle, and I think it's important that it be included among a menu of issues.
And what would your thoughts be on the idea of having a simple referendum again to simply delete that provision which went into the Constitution 31 years ago?
I'm not satisfied that is the way forward, because the consequences of that will have to be weighed up in a way that perhaps they haven't been to date. So I'm not going down the referendum road. What I am anxious to do is that we see the operation of this Act, which is only a year in operation. In fact, it's much less than a year in operation, but that we have a look at the workings of the Act in the context of what appears to have happened in recent months, which is a matter of some concern, I might add.
What about the idea? I mean, the simple consequence of having that referendum would be that there would be no provision in the Constitution, and then it would be a matter for the legislators to take whatever legislative action was needed.
Well, what David Farrell is proposing, really, that we try and reduce the polarised politics out of this altogether. It's important that there be something of a people's mandate for whatever action takes place. And you know, what the Dáil and Shannon did on the last occasion was legislate in the context of what Fine Gael said they would do in going before the electorate. So it's important that there be a people's mandate for this. And I'm not sure if there is a mandate for another referendum in advance of the next general election, which is about 18 months away.
Just before we move on, do you have a personal view on whether it should be open to women who have been the victims of rape, or who have fetuses which are described as suffering from fetal abnormalities, that the option should be open to them, which it isn't at the moment, to have abortions?
I think these are issues that should be looked at. They weren't on the last occasion because we were confined to the electoral commitment that was given. What I am concerned about is the concept that a caesarean section would be afforded to somebody after 25 weeks of pregnancy, because I think that gives rise to a situation where there will be a difficulty with regard to independent living for that baby. And I think that's a concern. However, in the first instance, what we need to do in this case is to assemble all of the facts and to go back over the medical treatment afforded to this most traumatised person from her entry to Ireland until such time as she had the delivery.
And as I say, you became Minister for Foreign Affairs earlier in the summer, just as the situation in Gaza was getting very intense, and some 2,000 people have died there and several dozen on the Israeli side. You have been described, and because you're, I think, a member of the Friends of Israel, a parliamentary...
No, I'm not a member of any parliamentary caucus.
Or have been in the past, clear. Maybe?
Well, there was an informal group that met in 2010, of which I participate.
Would you accept the description that's been attributed to you as being basically pro-Israeli in your views in the Middle East?
No, I wouldn't at all. I have a position as Minister for Foreign Affairs. When I speak on behalf of the Irish people, I acknowledge the need for a two-state solution, a viable Palestinian state, a secure Israel, and I'm very concerned that the ceasefire, which had been in place for the last 5 days, has broken down, and I would again urge all parties involved to recommit themselves to dialogue and to negotiation. But in order to do that, we need an immediate ceasefire. There has been a horrific loss of life in Gaza and in Israel. Absolutely and utterly unacceptable. I did have the opportunity on at least three occasions of speaking to the Israeli ambassador, of saying to him in no uncertain terms that the Irish people were horrified with what was happening in the region. I asked that he convey that to his counterparts in Tel Aviv, to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, which he did, and I am in regular contact with
but
him.
But did you tell him that you thought that the Israelis' response to what was happening was way out of proportion?
I did.
To the threat.
Yeah, and I made particular reference to an attack on a UN school, which was utterly horrific. And I asked him to convey the views of the Irish people directly to the Prime Minister, which he undertook to do and which I understand he did.
But do you have any sense that they themselves get the idea that repression breeds resistance and that far more Israelis have died as a result of their efforts to tackle this threat, which they were dealing with very effectively through their Iron Dome system.
Yeah.
several dozen Israeli troops, over 60 I think, have died this summer alone. Now that's a small number relative to the thousands of Palestinians, women, children, older people, and that this is something which is merely going to perpetuate the situation.
Any loss of life in these circumstances is not only regrettable but is to be condemned. I support a resolution through political dialogue. It's absolutely essential that there be moves towards a viable Palestinian state, that Palestinians and Israelis ultimately will have to live side by side. The situation in Gaza now is such that there needs to be a programme of reconstruction, that Palestinians need to be encouraged to trade, to engage in commerce, and to live side by side with their Israeli neighbours.
But the longer time goes on, and you go back decades, the harder that objective seems to be and the further away it seems to be moving.
Yes, and that's why it's absolutely essential to acknowledge that compromises will have to be made, and very tough compromises will have to be made.
To your suggestion that you're not, you don't accept the idea that you're pro-Israeli, but you did attack the aid agency Trokra 2 years ago. You said they were waging a campaign against Israel, and you also criticised the Irish media, and I think the quote was, for slavishly dancing to the Palestinian drumbeat for decades.
Yeah, I did.
That is pro-Israeli comment.
I did have a difficulty with Trokra. I acknowledge the fact that Israel is a democratic state entitled to defend its borders and its territory. I did have a difficulty with Trokra. I corresponded with them. I spoke to them. I spoke to the Catholic bishops. And I have to acknowledge, actually, in spite of that, I have to acknowledge that the great work that aid agencies like Trokra are engaged in Palestine. And I support what the Irish government is doing. In fact, only last week, myself and my colleague Minister Sean Sherlock made available a further €500,000 towards the relief of suffering to the victims in Gaza, which brings the sum already this year to the tune of €10 million that we are giving to the Palestinian people to in order to assist them. That is not a miserly sum in the context of our current economic situation.
What do you say to the comment carried in the Phoenix a couple of weeks ago, Phoenix magazine, which suggests that Charlie Flanagan appears to be atoning for his father, the late Oliver J. Flanagan, TD, who would have been well known to certainly our more senior listeners, and who was a TD, I think, in the Leash Offaly constituency since 1943 up to the end of the 1980s. His outrageous views and statements in the past.
I don't comment, Sean, on the Phoenix magazine.
Is there a sense that you feel that you need to kind of redress the balance that may be there in things that your father, Oliver J. Flanagan, said?
I'm proud of my father's record serving the people of Leash Offaly over the years. I didn't agree with much of what he said. We agreed to differ on many issues over the years. Overall, I'm very proud of his contribution. He was my father. He was my dad. I succeeded him in politics, and I'm very proud and indeed privileged to serve the people
and
of Leash Offaly.
Did it cross your mind that he might be revolving in his grave when you very strongly called for the the papal nuncio to be expelled from this country 3 years ago after the publication of the Klein Report.
No, I don't suppose he would. There were numerous issues upon which my father and I shared a different opinion, and these views were sharpened and honed over the breakfast table in Mountmellick for many years until his death in the mid-1980s.
And, I mean, did you fall out or did you just have vigorous discussions?
Oh, we never fell out. He ultimately was probably my best friend. My fondest memories as a child were traversing the constituency of Lee Shoffley with him in his car when I was about 8 or 10 years of age. In fact, only recently I met a constituent who reminded me of a conversation he had with me when I was 10 years of age, when he asked me what I was going to be when I grew up. And without hesitation, he told me my answer was that I was going to be a TD. Why are you going to be a TD? And he said that the reply that I gave, which I can't recall, was, well, I'd like to be a TD driving around at the constituency in a big car every day talking to people.
And I suppose you achieved that, and he would have been very proud, as indeed you were, I suppose, when he became, I think, briefly Minister for Defence, having been a Parliamentary Secretary, if memory serves me rightly. But it's something that, you know, is there in your political lineage. And, you know, particularly just going back to the question of abortion, he was very much at the forefront of the Fine Gael rump, to maybe use an unkind word, including people like Alice Lennon and others. Michael J. Cosgrave
indeed
comes to mind, who forced the pace on having that original amendment carried out, or at least held all those decades ago. And is it the fear and the memory maybe of the convulsions which your party endured then and much more recently, 12 months or so ago, on this issue which makes you as reticent as you were about pushing that issue any further?
But these are very difficult issues, not only in Ireland, but throughout the world. The issue of abortion has convulsed the United States of America for decades. It's not a black and white issue. And I believe it's important in the context of any way forward that we deal with the issues in a compassionate way, and that we respect the position of women, and that we acknowledge the right of, you know, a fetus or baby to be born and live independently.
So you do believe that you do fundamentally support, or do you, the idea that there are two human lives at stake in this issue?
Yes.
Right. Now, your other big area of responsibility, and perhaps it really is very much to the forefront, is Northern Ireland. And very recently, at the start of this month, the Sinn Féin president, Gerry Adams, in what was flagged by Sinn Féin as a keynote statement, warned in that statement that the power-sharing administration in Stormont is facing its most serious threat in years. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I very much acknowledge that there are real and serious difficulties. In fact, the evening of my appointment on the 11th of July, which was the eve of the 12th of July, I made immediate contact with Secretary of State Theresa Villiers by way of a phone call. I spoke directly to Martin McGuinness, I spoke to Alistair MacDonald, I spoke to David Ford of the Alliance Party, and I made arrangements to travel to Northern Ireland in mid-July. I believe it's important that there be a level of engagement from the two governments, the UK government and ourselves. We are custodians and guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement. It's now 16 years since the completion or signing of the agreement. And yes, there has been a great level of progress, but it is regrettable that the power-sharing executive appears now to be suffering some form of gridlock. And again, I would appeal to the parties, as I did appeal to Peter Robinson and Martin McGuinness, to get back to work. Because if the executive isn't working, there's a vacuum. And if there's a vacuum, the vacuum will be filled by dissidents. But I have to say, in the context of the 12th of July, and I would certainly like to compliment our unionist brethren for the manner in which they engaged to ensure that there was a peaceful 12th. If you recall, Sean, in early July, it was anticipated that there was going to be trouble. The tensions were very high. nevertheless, we can look back at both the 12th of July and the, and indeed more recently the apprentice boys of last week.
They haven't gone with the basis of the Haas report on our proposals dealing with parades, the past and flags.
No, and that's why I think it's important.
I mean, Sinn Féin has.
Yeah, well, it's important that there be engagement on the part of the two governments. There was a proposal by a pan-unionist front that there be a commission of inquiry into parades with particular reference to the North Belfast parade. And I also had an opportunity of...
Do you support that?
Of visiting that parade. No, I don't support it. And the reason I don't support it is that I believe it would have the effect of undermining the parade's commission.
And yes,
I think
and it's important. You share the Sinn Féin analysis then.
Well, it's important that the parade's commission not be undermined. I think it plays an important and indeed largely successful role over the years.
What about Gerry Adams' statement that the fact is that the anti-agreement axis has been very active in a asserting a negative agenda. Too many in the pro-agreement axis, with some notable exceptions, have been passive. This includes the Irish government. You're
well,
passive.
No, I don't accept that at all. In fact, there has been a high degree of engagement by my predecessor, Eamon Gilmore, and indeed Enda Kenny, who very recently spoke on this issue at the British Prime Minister David Cameron. It's important that there be full engagement. As I've said, we are custodians of the agreement. I intend over the tenure of my office to visit Northern Ireland. And what I want to do actually is to encourage the middle ground. I'm very concerned, Sean, that there isn't activists coming from the middle ground, from the trade union movement, from the employers' organisations, from the professions, from people who go to work every day in Belfast and return home in the evenings. There are too many people who don't vote. There are too many people who say that politics is in some way removed from them. And it's important, therefore, that we encourage participation, and I will do that. We have had a full-time secretariat in Belfast now for some time, working on a daily basis with civic society, engaging, encouraging. I would like to see a greater level of cooperation on the economic and commercial front. And again, my colleague Sean Sherlock is actively engaged. He's been to Northern Ireland on at least two occasions since he was appointed only 3 or 4 weeks ago. We need to ensure that there are commercial links. I want to see more twinning in terms of schools, sporting organisation. I want to remove a level of ignorance that still exists between North and South, notwithstanding the fact that the agreement has been signed for over 16 years.
You had a long apprenticeship in politics before you became a minister. I think notoriously you backed the wrong horse in more than one heave in Fine Gael, but I suppose things looked up for you initially. At least the potential was there when you saw other people who were brought into cabinet, and then you got your opportunity when Alan Shatter resigned. And then just within several weeks, I suppose, was the reshuffle. Did you have any fear that you might lose your cabinet position at that stage, or were you always confident that whatever happened, you'd be still there?
No, I wasn't confident. Fortune favours the prepared. In 2011, when Enda Kenny and Eamon Gilmore formed the government, there weren't sufficient seats around the table to accommodate a lot of people, myself included. Enda Kenny did indicate that he would at some stage reshuffle his deck. I was prepared.
But you leapfrogged the junior ranks.
I had been chairman of the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party, and indeed over the years I had a number of portfolios. It's not a question of leapfrogging anyone. I felt that I was prepared, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity. In fact, I'm honoured and privileged to serve in cabinet. There are 166 TDs. Less than 10% of them can serve in cabinet at any time. I'm particularly privileged to have been given the foreign affairs portfolio. When I look back at illustrious foreign ministers, and I include Frank Aiken, I include Dick Spring, I include my own party colleagues, Liam Cosgrave and Peter Barry, both of whom I've had
you better mention
visit
Garrett
my
Wilder
office. And indeed the late
and
Garrett
Gerry Collins,
one of the stronger foreign ministers, all of whom served the state with some distinction. And I look forward to playing a very positive and active role over the next period of 16 to 18 months, being the voice of the Irish people abroad.
Charlie Flanagan, TD Minister for Foreign Affairs, thank you very much indeed for coming to studio.